Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and this is the Sunday Roundup. Thursday's general election was bad news for the Labour Party, which won its lowest number of seats in the House of Commons since 1935. Andrew Marr spoke to the Shadow Chancellor John McDonnell about what went wrong and who bore responsibility for Labour's historic defeat.
What nobody has yet heard is a proper apology. Anybody at the top of the party saying, yes, this is on us.
OK, let me make it clear then. It's on me. It's on me. Let's take it on the chin. I own this disaster. So I apologise. I apologise to all those wonderful Labour MPs who've lost their seats, who worked so hard. I apologise to all our campaigners. But most of all, I apologise to those people who desperately need a Labour government. And yes, you know, if anyone's to blame, it is me. Full stop.
However, McDonnell also pointed to where he felt a great deal of the blame lay.
Do you not acknowledge there was something about Jeremy Corbyn, and perhaps you, that a lot of traditional Labour voters did not like? Maybe it was the past support for Irish republicanism and Hamas and all of that. Might have been, but there was something there. I've got lots of quotes. I'm going to read you just one more from a Labour MP who was re-elected, your last MP in Scotland, Ian Murray. He says, every door I knocked on and my team and I spoke to 11,000 people mentioned Corbyn. Not Brexit, but Corbyn. I've been saying this for years. The outcome is that we've let the country down and we must change course and fast.
OK. I have a lot of time for Ian, but he'll admit he's not, from the beginning, was never really... never really the most solid Jeremy supporter, but there you are. However, he's reflecting what he had heard on the doorstep. I think that was about the media portrayal of Jeremy than the reality. But let's have the debate about the nature of our politics, the nature of the reportage of our politics, and the nature, I think, the way they treat individuals. Because it wasn't just Jeremy. They did the same to Ed Miliband. They did the same to Neil Kinnock.
So you don't think it's anything to do with the actual characters at the top of the Labour Party?
I think it's anyone who challenges the establishment will be portrayed in this way. Why? Because the establishment owned the media in this country.
Okay,
however, that doesn't mean to say mistakes weren't made, and I'm sure there's elements of my politics and my character that could be taken apart. I accept that. But I think if you look at anyone who's challenged the system, of course the system will throw the kitchen sink at you, and that's what happened.
Marr also spoke to the Wigan MP Lisa Nandy. With Jeremy Corbyn announcing that he will not fight another general election as leader, Marr asked Nandy if she would consider running herself.
Well, the honest answer is that I'm seriously thinking about it. The reason that I'm thinking about it is because we've just had the most shattering defeat where you really felt in towns like mine that the earth was quaking, and we've watched the entire Labour base just crumble beneath our feet. I think we need to think seriously now about, first of all, how you bring those lifelong Labour voters who felt that they couldn't, not only couldn't vote Labour, but actually in many instances chose the Tories, how you bring Labour home to them. And I also think we have to think seriously about how we rebuild that coalition that has propelled us into power three times in the last 100 years, the Lewishams and the Lees, and how you speak for both. I think that I definitely have a contribution to make. I come from one part of that coalition. I've lived in and represented another part for the last decade. But I think we need to take a bit of time to think seriously about how we're going to take that very hard road back to power and who is best placed to fix it.
One party that did enjoy a great deal of success on Thursday was the SNP. The Scottish First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, had a message for Boris Johnson.
As I was saying yesterday, and it's again quite a fundamental point of democracy, you cannot hold Scotland in the union against its will. You cannot sort of just lock us in a cupboard and turn the key in and hope that everything goes away. If the union, if the United Kingdom is to continue, then it can only be by consent. And if Boris Johnson is confident in the case for the union, then he should be confident enough to make that case and allow people to decide. Because if it's to continue, it can only be by the will and the consent of the people of Scotland. Scotland cannot be imprisoned within the United Kingdom against its will. And these are just basic statements of democracy. And, you know, the Tories might rage against the reality of what happened on Thursday for a while. I fully expect that they will. But ultimately, they're going to have to face up to and confront that reality, because the will of the Scottish people cannot be ignored. And that's just the simple fact of the matter.
However, the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, Michael Gove, told Sophie Ridge that the government would not acquiesce to the SNP's demands.
We had a referendum on whether or not Scotland should be separate from the United Kingdom in 2014, we were told that that referendum would settle the question for a generation. In this general election, we have just seen what happens when politicians try to overturn a referendum result. And in the same way, we should respect the referendum result of 2014. Scotland is stronger in the United Kingdom. You can be proudly Scottish and proudly British together. The best of this country, the National Health Service, the BBC, these are British institutions, and therefore we should be proud of what we've achieved together and confident that the United Kingdom is a strong partnership that works in the interests of all.
So is this a guarantee that for the whole five-year term, the whole term, and no matter what happens in the Scottish parliamentary elections, though this government will not guarantee another independence referendum?
We were told in 2014 that that would be a choice for a generation. We are not going to have an independence referendum in Scotland.
Gove also outlined why he felt confident that the government would conclude its trade deal with the European Union by the end of 2020.
We can just have a look at something that Michel Barnier, the chief Brexit negotiator, said in a leaked recording this week. He said it's unrealistic that a global negotiation can be done in 11 months, so we can't do it all. That sounds pretty emphatic.
Yes, but Michel Barnier's view is a view that is different from that of other European politicians. Simon Coveney, who's the Irish foreign minister, their deputy prime minister, someone who's been intimately involved in these negotiations...
Well, Michel Barnier is the one who's leading negotiation from the EU. You can't get much more involved than that.
Simon Coveney takes a different view, as do a number of other European politicians. Earlier today on Sky News, we heard from Peter Lilly, the Secretary of State, who concluded many trade negotiations when he was Secretary of State at the Department of Trade and Industry. And he made it clear that we start from a strong position. There was scepticism, including from Michel Barnier, that we would be able to change the withdrawal agreement before this election. The Prime Minister, in short order, changed the withdrawal agreement, which people said was impossible, and ditched the backstop, which people said was also going to be beyond anyone's grasp. The speed and effectiveness with which the Prime Minister negotiated or renegotiated the withdrawal agreement, I think, demonstrates his determination, our government's determination, to ensure that we not just leave the European Union by January the 31st, but we also conclude the remaining arrangements by the end of 2020.
You and I both know there's a big difference between changing part of the withdrawal agreement, much of which had been negotiated before, and getting an entirely new trade deal organised in 11 months.
Quite a lot of the detail that we need to negotiate is already laid out in the political declaration. So a lot of work has been done, and as a number of people have pointed out, there are areas where the European Union's interests and the United Kingdom's interests are already closely aligned. So I'm confident that we will be able not just to leave the EU on the 31st of January, but also to conclude all the details of a new relationship in short order.
Caroline Flint, who lost her Don Valley seat to the Conservatives, took aim at several senior Labour figures for their role in the party's poor performance.
I do believe that in the pursuit of Remain, a number of people who have been ardent Remainers in our party, on our front bench, people like Keir Starmer, people like Emily Thornberry, but many others, Hilary Benn, Yvette Cooper, they have contributed to sacrificing 59 seats. I think I said 40 we would lose if we pursued this strategy. 59 seats. But don't worry, we've got Putney and we've got Canterbury. With all due respect to the Labour MPs for those constituencies, I don't believe that was worth it.
You name-check Sir Keir Starmer and Emily Thornberry there, two people who are expected to run for the leadership of the party. What do you think would happen if they, either of those two people or similar Remain-supporting people from metropolitan seats, if someone of that background became the next leader of the Labour Party?
I don't believe anybody who have been the architects of our European policy in the last few years, I think, is credible to be a leader. That I don't think they can win back these seats. And we may not, I'm afraid to say, you know, we shouldn't take it for granted that a change of leader is going to win us in 5 years' time, if that's when the election is called. But I don't believe there's any credibility for these people. You know, Keir Starmer led us to a policy that did not listen to Labour Leave voices who urged caution. He led us down the path of a second referendum. And I'm afraid Emily Thornberry did as well. She said to one of my colleagues, I'm glad my constituents aren't as stupid as yours. I'm sorry, it's not acceptable.
And finally, Sir Ed Davey expressed his disappointment in Nicola Sturgeon after she was caught cheering the defeat of Liberal Democrat leader Joe Swinson.
We saw the video of Nicola Sturgeon, the leader of the SNP, celebrating the result when Joe Swinson lost her seat. Come a quick look at that on the screen. I'm sure you've seen this. What's your reaction?
She's not very dignified, is she? And I think that approach to politics, taking glee in someone else's defeat, is, in the way that she does, a very personal way, isn't appropriate for the First Minister of Scotland.
That's all for this week. I'm Isabel Hardman, and this podcast was produced by Matthew Taylor. Don't forget to subscribe to the Coffee House Shots podcast on the iTunes store, and we also have a special offer. You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks in print and online for just £12, and you'll receive a free £20 gift card to spend at Amazon. Just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. And if you enjoyed this podcast, do subscribe to our daily evening blend email. It's a free roundup of all the political news each day, along with analysis and a diary on what to expect next. Just go to spectator.co.uk/evening blend. Thanks for listening.